Drop it! Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Lucid Reviews Film Podcast. My name is Adrian Atwood, and I'm joined here by two co-hosts.
Ian Bourne.
And Ryan Lynch.
And today we'll be discussing 1987's RoboCop, directed by Paul Verhoeven and starring Peter Weller, Kurtwood Smith, Nancy Allen, and many others.
Come quietly or there will be trouble.
In a dystopic and crime-ridden Detroit, a terminally wounded cop returns to the force as a powerful cyborg haunted by submerged memories. Of course, RoboCop is recently taken on as a remake, 2014's RoboCop. And so that's brought this movie back into a lot of people's consciousness, and we thought it would be interesting to go back and see this movie. I haven't seen it since the 1990s when I was a kid.
I figured
I remember that movie. I remember liking it. I remember that there was at least two sequels that got progressively worse. There was a TV series.
I do remember the TV series, actually.
Yeah.
I don't think I got past the first or second episode, but I definitely remember it was there. I appreciated that. It just didn't really seem to do much for me, though. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great character. Definitely a formative character. I mean, I remember it's one of those characters that as soon as you, at least as a kid in the 90s when I saw it, instantly was like, yes, wow, this is an awesome character.
Finally.
Yeah.
I personally was a huge fan of the sequels. I do remember them, and I did see them.
Come on, you enjoyed them when they first came out.
I was a kid, yeah. I ate it up.
I ate RoboCop 3 up totally when I first saw it, and then I actually saw it maybe 5 or 6 years ago again and just realized what garbage the third one is.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But
it's not even Peter Weller.
Who doesn't even who doesn't want a robot ninja, a jetpack fighting RoboCop.
I remember the jetpack.
It's kind of interesting to see how, when you go back and watch this movie and how narrow and focused the story was on this, this one criminal. But when I seem to remember it as being a kid, remember this whole world involving RoboCop, and then you see the movie and it's just he just, took out one drug lord pretty much in the movie. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. But there were the video game tie-ins, the RoboCop versus Terminator, and there were even, I remember, comic books, RoboCop appearing in some comic books. I think he even fought Predator in some of the comic books. So that kind of fleshed it out a little bit. And plus, you have a lot more time on your hands when you're a kid and daydream about that sort of thing.
With respect to it being a cool character, it definitely puts the police force in a good light. Something I know that, or I've heard, I've read, I've seen that, the X-Files, the FBI was a huge fan of the X-Files because it did portray them in a very good light. But then as the series progressed, they started getting really deep into the plot and stuff, that the FBI said, hey, listen, you guys got to kind of tone it down and put the light off us a little bit.
That's because everything in the X-Files was real.
Well, maybe there's some other elements getting mixed up there, but RoboCop definitely put the police force in a good, respectful, healthy light and had that sort of message, I feel. But
well, I guess later we can get to that, and I'll bring up some points as to why.
All right. Good character is essentially what I'm getting at. I agree. It, definitely a good character. Appeals to a lot, the family, the kids, everybody. Hmm.
Except for the gore, except for the toxic melting man being hit by a car.
Yeah, the overt violence and blood, sure.
Character mutilation of dead bodies.
Yeah, homoerotic, threatening in a bathroom. So. But besides that, kid friendly.
Something Ryan was just saying is that second time around seeing this movie, and I have to say this is probably the second time I've actually seen the movie, or total I've seen it, that the focus did seem to be more on the crime and the criminals. That RoboCop, again, really had a, you know, it was half the movie, if that. And I found it was very poor in sort of background and familiarizing yourself with the character, all that sort of thing. Mm. I would have wanted more for that, even though he was a good character.
Yeah, well, they have to get you to hate the bad guy.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
true.
Probably, I'm assuming that's why they focused more on you know, Clarence Boddicker.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was a more interesting character. But even, I mean, even his character wasn't really... I mean, I guess we could get more into that. Maybe you should summarize the plot a little bit better. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure this, the plot of RoboCop's no secret, really.
The name says it all.
Well, I think we can get into the plot in a second, but we do want to do this interest. We have a sort of interesting alternative viewpoint on movies, films in general. So we're going to try this new section with Ian, where he's going to sort of lay the groundwork for the sort of astrological influences of the actors, the directors, the writers, the culture at large at the time. So I'll just hand it over to you. Go ahead, take it away.
Okay, first and foremost, just lay down a little bit of groundwork and justification for why I do this, or what it is exactly that my perception is, and that, you know, akin to studying and watching films growing up, I also studied astrology, and, you know, I had the idea to see if there is any sort of relevance, if there's any sort of, you know, any of that at work. And then, you know, simple observation does give way to suggest that, and ultimately I've concluded that filmmakers do employ astrology and tarot and other sort of esoteric teachings when writing films, or at least that, you know, they may do this. And that suffice it to say that 33% of all films don't do this, where 33% of films may actually incorporate a natural element if astrology is to, you know, show that it does and can work. And that the other 33% is that there is intentional use of astrology and all that sort of thing. A couple of points that I should make is that, you know, whenever discussing something of this nature, visual aids are always sort of helpful and necessary. So I'm going to try to paint as best a picture as I can for the listener. Anything I do say about astrology can easily be found on any website pertaining to astrology or any book pertaining to that subject, so I'm not really going to cite anything particularly, but anyone that is familiar with their own sun sign, let's say, you know, can probably attest to, you know, what will be presented. I think that might suffice just for an intro, and then we can sort of kind of get into... More details, perhaps?
Yeah, do you have anything to say in general about the movie, without sort of delving too deeply into specifics about the film, about the plot, for example? Is there anything you can say about themes, relations between the actors, characters?
Where I gave you that whole 33% thing, I can ultimately say that... this film probably doesn't intentionally use astrology, and that any evidence of it is more sort of a natural effect. For instance, a lot of these characters in this film, particularly the stars, Peter Weller, Nancy Allen, Kurtwood Smith, and the director himself, Paul Verhoeven, are actually all the sun sign Cancer. And essentially their birthdays are all within about a week or two of each other. So that being said, we should expect to see some themes concurrent with the Cancer sign, predominantly that elements of the home, the family, more motherly or nurturing type qualities, seeing water in the film because Cancer is a water sign, which, again, I didn't really see anything really pertaining to water and or emotions, with the exception of the home and the family where Peter Weller or RoboCop's family... It's almost as if the movie made very little attempt to make any sort of emotional connection to make you feel bad for RoboCop, where I argue that they probably could have done more of that to make you more connected to the main character. But one last thing I just want to go back to about the main stars is that Peter Weller and Nancy Allen, their birthdays are actually one day apart. So,
yeah, that's interesting. I think that, you know, as far as the elements of family, home, they're definitely there. If anything, the movie sort of presupposes that those things are in jeopardy or have been destroyed. You know, that crime is what threatens those things.
Sure.
I mean, RoboCop, Alex Murphy, the character, before he becomes RoboCop, he has those things taken away from him because of the violence and crime in the city.
Mm-hmm.
He's a direct victim. And yeah, I mean, I'd say that what little character development there is for him is about, has to do with his family.
Okay, yeah. So you agree that there is a direct sort of surface level, very, very observable. These themes are very observable.
As far as that family.
Home and family, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, the elements of water, you know, that's a tough one. I would say toxic water is definitely.
There was that one scene at the end with the bad guy.
There's also the gas explosion.
The liquid fuel.
Which was clearly water.
Yeah. I mean, liquid, fluid in general, but in this instance, it's poisonous.
Yeah.
You know, and then maybe it's related to the poisonous climate of the city.
Another thing I don't have listed here is, well, actually I do, cancer to protect and serve. He was a police officer, and that is the motto of the police, to protect and serve. And that Cancerians do have this, they are equated with the crab, who has this hard exterior shell, and that, analogous to the themes of home and family and mothers, they do take on this quality of protection, that it is in the home that you feel safe, and that, yeah, again, concurrent with the police and the city, that we should feel safe. You know, they were out there trying to create a safer environment.
Yeah, that's very interesting stuff, and I think for the time being, that's good. That's a good starting
point. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, for the listeners too, you gotta have an idea of where astrological terminology and concepts start to fit into the discussion here, and as we go along, it'll probably come back. I'd like to just mention a few things about the film, about its accolades. Interesting. You wouldn't think that a movie called RoboCop would win an Academy Award, but it did win in 1988, I believe. It won an Academy Award in a special category for sound effects editing. And I did notice their sound effects contributed heavily to making this movie what it was. I mean, doors opening with this flange effect when they didn't need to be. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't RoboCop's perspective. It was just him opening a door.
When his hand just flies into the shot, and then you just get that swoosh, like just his hand appearing on screen makes a noise.
I thought the thud of his feet was very pronounced. To give you the impression that he was, you know, this machine that has weight and certainly solidarity to it.
Same with the Ed 209. That had its own voice. It had this sort of animalistic.
Right.
I think it growled a few times.
Right.
Cried like a baby when it fell down the stairs.
Actually, there's a little nod to cancer, family, the baby food. It would feed baby food, you know.
Right.
He's sort of treated like an infant in a way.
And then there's probably something else we could say about rebirth. He was, you know, he lived and died as a human, then was rebirthed as a machine, and then fed baby food. Yeah, that's a good point.
There was a pretty noticeable progression from RoboCop from the beginning when he was born, so to speak. And then up to the end, you'll even notice that his the way that he moves becomes less mechanical throughout the movie.
Yes. Yeah.
And it ends with him, you know, being unmasked. And I even felt like when he was first unmasked, his expressions weren't quite human. By the time he arrives at the OCP office and when he smiles at the old man character, whatever his real name was, we don't know, but you can see that at that point that he has become, you know, Murphy again, which they obviously say, you know, he tells him his name is Murphy, but that's the first time that I noticed really that he had a fully, like, human countenance there.
I'd like to just make a comment back to the fact that this movie won an award for sound effects, was it?
Yeah.
And again, I don't know what culture.com, what sort of sway this website actually has when it comes to its top 10, but it does list RoboCop as the 10th greatest movie cop film of all time, with Serpico being the first, just sort of adding into the fact that this movie does actually have more to it than meets the eye, you know, a lot of surprises, I'd say.
Yeah, there's, as far as RoboCop's evolution from machine back to man, Peter Weller actually took mime lessons to get the robot gestures right.
Wow.
And if you notice, you can see, you know, he does it so well that you don't think that it's a man in the suit.
Yeah, totally agreed. I was actually going to comment when Ryan said that he was talking about the transformation, how he went from robot to a man, that I do agree there were a few times where it's like he really did seem like a robot cyborg, not human. Very, you know, we were even joking about
maybe kind of hokey in a sense,
but that's what robots are, you know. They're not human, they're cheesy, they're rigid, and but maybe that's what even inspired that whole robot dance in the 80s. I'm not so sure, but
the scene where he's dreaming, right, he's freaking out in the dream, I think that I've seen that the close-up shot of him shaking the chair as like a gif or something, because that I thought was hysterical. His robot freak out during the dream was just it was like a dance move in and of itself. Yeah.
Since you guys are bringing up the whole dream aspect, I did want to I do have another relevant point. One is that DreamWorks Studio logo. We do see a picture of the moon with somebody at the end of it fishing. So we have three elements here. Someone fishing, which would suggest the nature of water, the moon itself, and then dream. These are all themes concurrent with water signs within astrology and the esotericism and so on. But also the fact that there is something to be said about the human quality or the nature of the subconscious, that, you know, maybe it's sometime in the future, you know, man is going to start to become integrated with machines, and that perhaps there is something about the nature of the subconscious in which humanity might lie here and there and all that sort of thing. But I found that the film did a really good job of where we actually saw the visuals of his dream coming through the monitors, and that was really good. I like that very particularly.
Yeah, so I like that the movie doesn't hold you by the hand and lead you through Alex Murphy's life before he turns into RoboCop. And I've heard it said elsewhere too, you know, if it had done that, and I haven't seen the new RoboCop, so I'm interested to find out how it handles this, but the fact that, you know, if they had introduced you to his wife, to his kid before, they would have had to give you more about what happens to them later. But because there, we only experience them through him, through his memories, they are, those characters in essence are just facets of him. They're not characters unto themselves.
In the film, right?
Yeah. And I think that leaves you the room to then project fill in the blanks of the rest of his life.
I see. And in that respect, you're connecting. This was sort of like a device that the producers or the filmmakers used to get you to connect along without, like you said, creating this backstory that would detract from the rest of the movie. Interesting.
And I think that speaks to the nature of the whole movie. There really isn't. The whole movie itself kind of really only exists now. You know, it opens with the news segments, which are all about now. They say, give us what, 3 minutes would give you the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about a culture, in a way, as far as we can tell, that exists perpetually in this sort of stagnant now, in a way. So it's just, I mean, whether it's because of media perpetuating that hyper-focus on what's hot, what's controversial, whether it's because we've got crazy politicians holding people hostage because they got fired and they want their job back or they didn't get elected. You know, that the world just marches forward and doesn't leave room for a kind of retrospect. And the only character that does is RoboCop, and it's because that's where he is able to find his humanity again. And I think that fits with the whole structure of the movie. I mean, if we had gotten the history of OmniCorp, I don't know if that would have been as interesting as just seeing Ed 209 blow a guy away. Like, that tells you all you need to know about the company. So I liked that it was fast. I liked that it was pretty lean on story, pretty lean on character.
But it did in a way that it wasn't sort of violating any.
Yeah.
You know, it worked. It worked well. Yeah. Especially now that I have this insight from you.
Yeah, I think. I mean, it was obviously hyper violent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that. I think it was satirical. It's meant to be so violent that you laugh, because all you can do is just go, "Oh, this is absurd."
Yeah, like, are they really showing this? Yeah.
And of course, the whole situation is absurd. The idea of turning a police officer into a robot cop is so absurd that. You're not supposed to take it literal. Literally.
Yeah, it's definitely a comic book thing.
Wasn't a comic book, though, right? This was a kind of purely original.
Yeah, no, not that I'm aware of, but I guess what I'm saying is that it really did embody the hero archetype that comics do. You said, it's not something you would take seriously. I guess I got a quick question, is that again, with respect to what you just said, very enlightening expose there. Was there anything about the film that you didn't particularly like? That you thought, and I'll just add, I'll offer what I thought was that perhaps, I felt that perhaps there could have been just a little bit more character development to get you to connect with RoboCop, to really feel bad for his tragedy, for his case, and maybe just a little less film time on, say, maybe the company and the bad guys. But other than that, I think just, those are just minor things that maybe would have helped. It's sort of splitting hairs at this point, but... I guess that's my only real critique.
About what I didn't like about the movie? Well, initially, as I was watching it, I was kind of thinking about how it was kind of like bare on, for character development and whatnot. But, I mean, those things are only valuable if they serve to further the story, I guess, which, like Adrian was just talking about, it doesn't, wasn't really necessary. In fact, that maybe, like he said, even, the story is not necessarily entirely about the characters, if that makes any sense. Really kind of they further articulate that.
Well, it seems like it's just more about the concept of a RoboCop.
The characters kind of, the characters move the story. And so, I mean, maybe it would have been interesting to see a little bit more about that, but it all depends on also, like, what, you know, what they're trying to say with the movie, what their objective was, if they're trying to say anything at all. I mean, if this was just pure entertainment, you know, an action movie, but it definitely, there seemed to be enough that there's a social commentary aspect of it, a big portion of that, which we can get into, because I always liked this movie. You know, I loved it.
A classic.
Loved it growing up, and I think it's you know, for the most part, it's held up pretty well. You know, it's kind of tongue in cheek at times, so you can't really fault it for being hokey, because it's made peace with. With that, or even intentionally been hokey, but
it was a low budget film.
But yeah, I mean, I thought it served, you know, served its own purpose pretty well, and is held up, you know, still entertaining even, you know, all these years later.
True.
And you know, there were two things that I just wanted to say that I thought were really interesting about the movie that I necessarily didn't notice, you know, or think about, you know, growing up watching it. And the first was that. You know, my history is, you know, not great with this, but it definitely kind of foreshadows the privatization of the, you know, government, you know, offices that have traditionally been, you know, the domain of government, like especially more recently, like the military privatizing aspects that were once government operations. Mm-hmm. As you notice, I mean, the whole issue that the police union was having was that, you know, basically the Detroit Police Department was becoming privatized. Mm-hmm. It was managed by this private arms company, which I think is kind of especially relevant today.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Adrian, I know you probably talk about the drones and all that. And another just kind of interesting thing was how the movie's perception of robots has changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this case, his motions may have been deliberately exaggerated in order to kind of demonstrate that progression from rebirth from, you know, man to machine back to man. But, you know, robots in the movies and like in the 80s and even earlier than that were completely differently portrayed than they are now, like kind of clunky. Yeah, slow-moving machines, powerful but slow-moving.
Yeah.
They can even...
Not streamlined.
Yeah, and then now you see some the way robots are portrayed in movies. They're faster and more agile than people.
What you might expect from a sophisticated
piece of technology. I was going to say people's kind of perception of that, or at least as illustrated by movies, has kind of changed. But yeah, mainly that was what stuck out with me was the... You know, privatization of and the conflict of interests will undoubtedly arise. You know, where the interests of the company are essentially at odds with, you know, their mission to serve the public. You know, through the police department, and you can see that even all of the characters in the movie were, well, not all of the characters, but all of the Clarence Boddicker's character and Dick Jones and even the person who created RoboCop were all you know, corrupt characters, self-serving. That was another kind of big theme, is that, you know, pretty much everyone in the movie had their own self-interest.
And that's, well, I'd have to think long and hard about how Officer Lewis was self-interested.
But she was a protagonist.
The antagonists mainly were.
There weren't many protagonists, honestly. You don't get to see a lot of the officers. You have the. I don't know what his rank is. The guy that ran the precinct.
Captain.
He seemed. He seemed to have the well-being of the police force in mind and citizens. But that's it. But everyone else, besides that handful of people, everyone else seemed pretty self-interested and self-serving.
Even RoboCop, when he learned the identity of his killers, he broke out of his chair and went and sought vigilante justice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I'd say if there was anything that I didn't like about the movie, I think that it it only just kind of scratched the surface of glorifying RoboCop.
Mm.
I feel like it was trying to turn his resurrection into something really grand, and I think that it came up a little short. And I think maybe that's because it was a little cliche. I mean, I really, really like the scene where he interrupts the rape in progress.
Mm.
Shows up, and there's a great shot, low angle shot from behind his leg, and you see his shadow cast on the wall,
yeah.
And it falls onto the two perps and the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very like German expressionist, like this really elongated, magnified shadow that is weighing down on these people. But that was the second instance of him stopping a crime. The first instance was just him stopping a holdup, and he just bends a gun barrel and throws a guy into a fridge, which is not really as dramatic. It's not as dramatic. The second one, with he just pulls up and his shadow falls on him, and you can just see, this is about to go down. But then what happens after that is not really all that dramatic or engrossing. I mean, he shoots the guy in his genitals through the girl's skirt. And he just shoots a guy in the crotch, which is pretty extreme and a powerful message. But maybe that just it's just going to show how outmatched the average person is against him. It's not going to be a long, drawn-out conflict.
Right.
He's just there to just go, bam, 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 that's the law.
Right.
But there is that imbalance, and you kind of expect him. I mean, maybe there's a limitation on the budget, too.
Yeah.
In the modern moviegoer I am now, I think, okay, we're not just going to see two or three instances of where he stops crime. We're going to see 15 and this montage with like an incredible score or something.
Right.
But it really was just, well, he stops all these kind of run-of-the-mill petty crimes, and there's no, and not that they shouldn't be stopped, but there's not high stakes necessarily for what he's doing.
There's no reason for you really want to see any of that.
Yeah, I mean, he really, and he's just doing what cops should do.
Yeah, right. That kind of underscores the fact that, he is, in a sense, he's not really meant to be like a superhero. He's meant to. He's supposed to be the first of many of his type that are eventually going to replace cops entirely.
But he's almost like overqualified in a way. So
he's doing like beat work, basically.
I think it might offer an interesting perspective is that something that that did get generated in the early parts of the film was that cops were being laid to waste left, right, and center. In fact, he was a victim of that.
Yeah.
So that if anything, he was going to not just replace one or two cops, but the entire precinct. I mean, if you had one guy out there doing all that stuff, it's kind of like the Batman thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to commit any crime. The RoboCops could be anywhere.
Right.
But that death really was a sort of central theme in all that. I guess that's all I have to offer.
Yeah, they never really offered any statistics or anything like that. That was almost kind of like beside the point, like you said. So maybe you would have been more interested then if they focused on RoboCop's effect on Detroit.
They also really didn't, as much time as they spent on the bad guys and the corporate bad guys and on Boddicker and his gang, at least for Boddicker, up until the scene in the Coke warehouse, I guess, I had no idea what Boddicker really did, what his gang was doing. They were just hooligans that seemed like they made themselves public enough that they caught the media's attention. But I don't, they didn't seem to have a goal other than just to taunt the police. So maybe if there was there was something that they did, some illegal substance, some so, arms trading, like, that specifically.
It's still unclear as to what his character really did.
Well, I mean, I get it. He's just, there's a scene at the end where he's talking to Dick Jones, and Dick Jones says, "Oh, Delta City will be open. That's, you know, plenty of room for gambling and drugs and all that." So you get a sense that he just does it all. You know, he doesn't need any of it. Just call Veronica.
Right.
But that was just.
I see.
But that was just, you know, not interesting.
Right.
It's just like saying he's just your average.
He's not special.
Guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe that is again a limitation of the budget or the storytellers, not within the scope of what the story was supposed to be about. But I felt that it did diminish some investment on my behalf as an audience member. You know, why do I care that they stopped Boddicker?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I, besides the fact that he killed Murphy, who obviously had a family, and that's why we care about Murphy, what else is Boddicker and his gang doing that we feel like he really deserves justice for? Because, I mean, even, what's his name, Morton, the guy that invented the RoboCop, or whatever it was, it's his project. He basically says, in an indirect way, that his project has basically seeded the police force with potential subjects for the RoboCop program. He says that when he first brings up the concept to the old man, he says, "We could go in 90 days. Or in fact, we're already putting police officers in place." That was Murphy. They transferred him to a new precinct, and for all we know, they sent him into a more violent area than he was used to, because they figured that's the outcome. We're gonna put him into the meat grinder, and we're gonna get a possible RoboCop out of it. So once you know that, you can't blame Boddicker as much.
Yeah.
In a sense, we know Boddicker's already just like a force of nature. He's just bad. But you've got like scientists who are plotting this, or, you know, corporate execs that know full well what they're doing, you know.
Yeah, well, in essence, yeah, Boddicker's really not the main bad guy, so to speak, because, I mean, it's implied that he already was working for Dick Jones anyways. So
yeah, it just seems like
he's kind of like a henchman.
Yeah, he was the muscle for hire. He was the one doing all the dirty work while these guys were doing all the tech stuff.
And again, I think the movie maybe lacked some dramatic unfolding in that department, because we knew that pretty early on.
Right, they gave it to you right away. There was no mystery.
If there had been a bigger reveal, we might have felt some kind of, you know,
more interest.
Knife turning in RoboCop's back.
Right.
When we found that out. But because we knew it all along, we just go, "Come on, RoboCop, get with it."
Right. Like,
you know.
Like he was supposed to feel bad that he was betrayed by OCP, even though they were kind of assholes from the beginning.
Right, right. They could have made Bob Morton's character a little bit more idealistic, as opposed to just, you know, sort of power hungry. You know, that he could have been appealed more to the police and appealed more, at least on the surface, to you and the audience, you know, and then turned out he's just scum like the rest of them.
Right.
You know, again, more of a reveal. But
yeah.
Again, character development on the bad guy's part, I guess.
I think Murphy's character was actually an employee of OCP. Maybe I got that wrong. But
no, he was a police officer.
Initially, who was declared dead. So therefore, he became property of OCP.
Because they said that
he had signed a waiver.
Right.
Essentially, OCP owned the police force at that point.
Right. Yeah, it was on their cars.
Yeah.
And again, I think this just comes full circle to that whole dream sequence where he stopped being the OCP property and regained his humanity. And that's when he turned the tables.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if they meant anything by this, or if it was just kind of like an oversight, but I did another thing interesting that I thought was that they mentioned that they were going to test the ED-209 machine in Detroit, and then based on whether or not that was efficient in civilian use, then like offer it to the military, which is like usually
the other way around.
It's usually the other way around. So I don't know if that was just another like statement about what they envisioned the future being, or if that was just kind of like a an oversight or something that they really didn't put much thought into.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of elements going on all at once. I mean, everything's sort of tied in well, I guess, and worked out. But.
Well, how about, just as a side note, that's not necessarily that, but I was found this very pretty interesting, surprising. It was actually filmed in Dallas, not Detroit.
Really?
Yeah. I guess because Dallas is a less cluttered city, and they had... Verhoeven thought that it was it lent itself better to portraying a future city than Detroit did at the time. But I think it's interesting, it talks about its 1987's portrayal of technology in the future. You mentioned about the way robots are portrayed. I actually thought that the way that the robots were portrayed in this movie was actually probably pretty groundbreaking. That they felt like actual entities. I didn't look at it and go, oh, that's a cartoon character, like you might do with trying to think of previous movies that had, you know, like a Short Circuit or something that was just like this. Something that really was meant to have human characteristics, but it wasn't humanoid. Whereas these ones, RoboCop and even Ed 209, 209 was more animalistic. It was more of like a guard dog than it was a man-like thing.
A cyborg.
Yeah. But then there was, like, you guys, we all picked up on the DVDs, which in 1987, I don't think they were household items.
Nah.
I mean, that had to be, I was thinking.
I don't think they existed. And then I think.
Well, obviously, in concept, they did.
The idea being that CDs obviously existed at that point, but maybe that was, their representation of the future is, oh, look, a CD that can play video.
Right.
Like, that's.
Like, I'm talking about the scene where Boddicker goes to Morton's house to kill him with a grenade, a digital grenade.
A digital display grenade.
And, you know, in so doing, he carries with him a disc that he plays for Morton on his TV, which is a video recording of Dick Jones telling Morton that why...
Getting his last laugh.
Yeah, which I thought was absurd. Why would... If we're in the future, we've got cyborgs, and he's got to give...
Human?
Yeah, he's got to give a pre-recorded message. He doesn't have, like, a digital real-time
uplink
kind of thing. He can't walk in there with a little device that just is live.
Right.
Like, last laugh has got to be a pre-recorded message.
It's funny, because I would say that it's not actually up until today in movies like Iron Man 3 that we're getting those types of technologies, at least displayed in film. I think if we were to see something like that in RoboCop, it would have been so ahead of its time that it could have had the effect that, this movie was incredible. I mean, that whole concept blew my mind.
That's interesting. Like, they hadn't even really... The idea of basically having everyone having their own private... TV broadcast, was not even like part, wasn't even in the public consciousness.
Right.
I mean, because that's basically what it would amount to. You'd have to have some kind of broadcast system and receiver.
Wireless, internet wasn't even really fully up and running at that time.
It's just like, well, what's really forward thinking? Well, just put it on a disc. A really flashy round disc.
Make sure it catches the light.
And then, and it'll impress people. And, maybe it did.
Yeah.
At the time.
Yeah.
But how about his knuckle spike interface?
That was cool.
It was cool. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was cool. It was totally arbitrary, too, though.
I'm trying to think. That's...
Yeah, especially based on, like, the fact that there already existed, like, connectors that could have done the job in a more practical way.
I never saw somebody else walking around with the spike, either.
Yeah. Well, it served as both a weapon and a technological interfacing tool. But I also saw it as a bit of a bite on R2-D2 in Star Wars.
Yeah, it did.
Because he had that.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm sorry, this could digress into a whole nother thing, is that, you know, parallels between RoboCop and Terminator. You had mentioned that they were looking for Arnold Schwarzenegger to actually play RoboCop. Mm. And what I found interesting, and all that I kept thinking about, was that, you know, Terminator, the original Terminator was 1984, where Arnold Schwarzenegger played a bad robot, and Weller played a good robot in RoboCop. And I can't help but think that that's what may have spurned the idea to make Arnold Schwarzenegger a good Terminator in Terminator 2.
I think you probably would get a very strongly worded response from James Cameron if you said to him that RoboCop 2 was, I mean...
RoboCop was the inspiration?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you might be right. I'm not going to...
They liked the character so much, and since the character was killed at the end of the first movie, they had to think of a way to bring it back.
And Terminator.
And the audience probably wouldn't want to see the Terminator, same Terminator, come back and be the bad guy again.
Okay.
So that's really kind of, I think, probably a way to kind of bring the character back and still have it be not just a rehash.
But I don't. But I can't say that Ian's wrong. I'm just saying. Yeah. I just could picture James Cameron's face souring at the idea.
I guess something could also be said about how maybe I can't really think of anything else at the top of my head. But how many times have robots in the '80s been portrayed as good things or bad things for humanity?
Yeah.
And maybe there's just something to be said about that. But
well, I mean, there's.
I thought I had some more notes, but.
Well, the knuckle spike interface thing, it was quite a useful little gadget. It basically flips it at the cop in the data room, who's, you know, when he goes in there looking for his own file and Boddicker's file, and he says, "Well, you can't be here." And he basically just flips him that spike. Mm-hmm. It's like giving him the finger.
So
it,
the bone.
Yeah.
It tripled as another human.
Yeah.
Human aspect.
And that was clever. And then of course he uses it. To, you know, a spoiler here. He uses it to kill Boddicker at the end.
Yeah.
Which I at that point I thought there's been so much gore in this movie, but they cut away. They didn't show him getting stabbed in the neck. And I don't know why that is. Like, maybe they just didn't shoot. They thought, well, we don't need that shot. We'll just shoot around it. We'll imply that he gets stabbed in the neck.
Hmm.
Or maybe maybe they cut it out from this edit of the movie. They thought, okay, that crosses the line.
Hmm.
We're only allowed so many scenes with this kind of level of violence.
Hmm.
But, again, this is what I mean about the movie stepping up to the plate as far as drama intensity goes, and then missing on a few of the swings. Because it's killing, essentially, the wickedest of the wicked.
That should have been a climax point in the movie. Yeah.
And instead it was, he's got Spike, and he's now stabbed in the neck, and we don't have time to like feel vindicated, really.
Right.
Or at least, I felt it didn't feel vindicated. And I didn't particularly feel like RoboCop was struggling, either.
I definitely remember. I remembered it being a lot more dramatic.
Yeah.
And it just kind of lost a lot of its oomph.
Yeah.
Watching it this time, it definitely seemed to play. In my memory, it was a much longer scene.
I feel as though somebody in the writing process said, okay, this scene needs to be drawn out a little bit because it doesn't make any sense. Boddicker's got his backup guy up on the ledge with another cannon.
Mm-hmm.
And he just doesn't shoot RoboCop. Instead, he just jumps trash on him.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. And so I think unconsciously, maybe watching that, we realize that this is really contrived at this point. And it lessens the tension.
Yeah.
Well, it also sets Boddicker up to be stabbed in the neck.
Yes.
I mean,
it's probably like that idea came first, and then they're like, oh, how are we going to get RoboCop in a situation where he's pinned? And
they modeled the whole movie around
they planned this movie from the end to the beginning.
They're hoping it's like, hey, we need a spike
in a room. RoboCop.
Actually, so maybe should have talked about this at the beginning, but nobody wanted to touch this movie. When it first was being pitched, nobody wanted to make the movie.
Right.
Like, RoboCop, that sounds stupid. No, thank you.
Right.
And it got passed around. And this guy, Verhoeven, basically, from what I understand, his previous contracts or previous connections sort of dried up, the money dried up, and he I don't know if this was his first American film. But he passed it. He passed it up initially, and his wife kind of convinced him.
Wow.
Give it another glance. You could actually do pretty well in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was the scene where we see Murphy flashback to his wife and his kids, and we get the longest sequence of his family life in the whole movie, mm-hmm. where he's walking through the house. It's that scene
mm-hmm.
that made Verhoeven go, "Okay, I'll do this."
Hmm. And I'm sorry, that's like a direct quote or something. You're getting this from a source here.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting.
But you know, this is the background, the story of how, I mean, how this got made at all.
So it was actually the family home-esque aspect of this whole thing that changed his mind to do this film.
Yeah, I think it was the unfolding of that character of seeing what Murphy's life was like. But yeah, it got passed up. Nobody wanted to make this movie. I think there's probably good reason too. You know, I mean, maybe in the hands of another director, this movie would have been really bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
if there wasn't extreme violence,
mm-hmm.
If we didn't have the really over the top sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if we didn't have these extended first-person perspective shots of RoboCop walking around, you know, it would have been not as engrossing.
Well, one thing I wanted to add, with that scene where he is going through the house, there was a little piece of symbolism, at least so I think there was, and I wonder if maybe it has something to do with what you just said about Verhoeven's idea, mind being changed. Was that, you know, he was going through the house in real time and then inserting memories, sort of holographic projections in his head or whatever, of his actual family being there. But one thing that was really there in real time was a shattered mug that said, "World's Greatest Husband."
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and which is to suggest where that whole house has been cleared out of all the other items, furniture and whatnot, but that one mug was there. And
well, there was also this pile of trash on the counter in a picture, burnt picture.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A few key items were left behind, it seems.
Yeah.
Interesting.
To develop the story.
Note that says to RoboCop.
Yeah.
Love your family.
You're dead, but
yeah.
With the shattered mug, I don't know if maybe they were trying to say that, you know, husbands need to be there, whether they're, you know, RoboCops or not.
Well, I mean, it was to characterize Murphy as world's greatest husband.
Okay, yeah, sure, you know, the iconic father.
That his family loved him.
Yeah. Yeah, reinforcing the family thing, sure.
Yeah.
I would like to see a TJ Laser spinoff.
Yes.
don't think it's going to happen at this point, but you never know.
Right.
Yeah.
Never got the green light from...
I find it interesting is character development and, again, reinforcing the whole family thing that they did create that TJ... what was it called again?
TJ Laser.
Laser, yeah. And that there was a few lines dedicated in the early of the film to that.
Yeah.
And then it was referenced throughout.
Yeah, he was trying to be his son's hero.
Yeah, interesting.
And as far as, like, world building, but yeah, I haven't read the original script. I'd be interested to know how much of the TV world was in the script or how much of it was, you know, the invention of Verhoeven, because Verhoeven likes to show you the world of his story through the lens of TV, like Starship Troopers.
Media.
Huge part of this.
Yeah, which I found analogous to District 9, and we were having that conversation how they heavily relied on the documentary aspect of that film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is interesting.
Well, yeah, actually, yeah, one thing that you saying that just kind of brought that back to my attention. I was going to bring up the comment about the TV, but it also made me remember another newscast. But yeah, just like how, you know, thinking about how violence is portrayed in the movie, and like just how casually scenes of death are on the news. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have the.
They were almost cheerful.
The mayor thrown out the window, which they show on TV.
Mm.
You know, just then the square just kind of like you know, recedes into the background and shows the female newscaster with this huge smile on her face and cheerful. And I think another one they showed the ex-president or something. They were doing CPR on somebody like in the middle of the road in one of the other newscasts. It was kind of business as usual. Don't think. I mean, you would never show anything like that on TV.
Yeah.
In the real world.
I laughed at you at the beginning of talking about the first newscast. They mention how gravity was lost on the space station, while the president was visiting, and how he was forced to, you know, an emergency situation exists and without gravity. But they called it the peace platform.
Wow.
Not the space station, the peace platform. Later, they talk about how the peace platform accidentally fired on, like, four different continents.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously tongue-in-cheek. It's obviously.
Yeah, that was very quick for me.
That kind of escaped my notice.
Well, I got most of that except for the whole president gravity loss thing.
It was quick. It was very quick.
I caught everything else up to that point.
I mean, there's so much of that in this movie. There's the newscasts. There's the, what is it, the 5,000 SUX car commercials.
6,000.
Yeah. There's the Nukem video game.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of commercialism.
Yeah.
A lot of American appeal, that type of deal.
TJ Laser.
Yeah.
Show.
Yeah. I find that's a very good effect.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah.
Again and again and again.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you just have the violence and the words escaping me. Misogyny, just like becoming like the domain of the family.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. I would actually be really interested now that we've watched this to go and see the new one. See that together.
Agreed.
And see how, like, I mean, obviously we know they're going to change things, but, you know, it's interesting to see if they keep that social commentary and how they update it. You know, for modern times.
I agree. I think I can see. Initially, I thought, do they really need to make another RoboCop?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we get it. He's a RoboCop. But then I thought more about it, and I realized we're already approaching now a world where robotic law enforcement is not a hyperbolic scientific metaphor or sci-fi metaphor anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's very close to reality.
Fully integrative almost.
Yeah. And so now the idea of a RoboCop movie is unlike the original where it was satirical. It was saying more about corporate greed than it. Whereas the new one is more of like a, I can imagine it being more of a warning. You know, more of a darker, dire.
Right. Two things. I just wanted to get back to that whole world thing with the laser and the gravity loss. They did reference the Star Wars program, which was current event at the time, missile defense, which, I suppose we might, actually, that's very relevant to the fact of what you just said, that this new RoboCop would probably have some sort of reference to drones and integration of, artificial intelligent technology.
Sure.
Second thing was, I think actually you're right. That the remake does hold a lot more appeal, especially with our critique of this now. You know, how exactly could they make this a success in the box office? And one thing I noticed was that it is a star-studded cast. Although the star of the film, I don't believe he's probably up and coming, if anything, but
yeah,
I don't recognize him.
I think he is. I don't want to say for him. He's a Swedish or Finnish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Norwegian. I think at least maybe I speak for the group that our perspective has changed on whether or not we might just see this one and then compare it and maybe even do a review of that as well.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see the new one. Definitely. And that would definitely be probably a good subject for another podcast follow up. As far as this one, though, I am also, on the one hand, interested to see the sequels, not dying to see them, but interested. I am also more interested to see some of his other movies, Verhoeven's other movies. Again, I've seen Starship Troopers, I've seen Total Recall, but I'm interested to see them again, this time to compare his style between them.
Right. Yeah, also, I mean, interestingly enough, yeah, they recently remade Total Recall.
Right. Which I did not see.
I saw it.
I didn't see the new one either.
That was insane.
Yeah, a coincidence maybe that, you know, they're remaking two of his movies, and it says something for that. Maybe.
Right. But he also made Showgirls, which
is not being remade. Yeah. Right. Interesting, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that he made that movie also, because it seems like a step apart from...
I would have to see that one again. I mean, I think when it came out at that age, I was probably trying to watch it for different reasons.
Yeah.
But I think that's what, in a way, that is, I think I mentioned this to you earlier, it's not Verhoeven's
forte.
It's not his grungy sci-fi satirical world. Mm-hmm. But just like those sci-fi movies, there's an element sleaze and Showgirls. That's, I get the sense that sleaze is what takes the front seat in the movie. And in a way, it's still kind of a dirty environment in that movie, and it's definitely urban. The characters are all self-interested. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I imagine that you could probably interpret Showgirls as a satire in a way also.
Right. I actually haven't seen Showgirls, but I have seen Basic Instinct, which is another Verhoeven movie, and Michael, and is with the elements of, I wouldn't say so much sleaze, but definitely sex. You know, that movie's certainly relevant to Showgirls, but also this movie is about it's a murder investigation that Michael Douglas is a cop. You know, so it does take on more of the detective aspects as opposed to the, you know, vigilante cop or the you know, renegade soldiers or whatever they were in Starship Troopers, but certainly that element of you know, law enforcement and whatnot, seems to be a recurring motif.
Sure.
And Total Recall, I think Schwarzenegger's character, he was a minor, but he went into that fictitious reality as a spy, I think. Like,
that would be interesting to watch that again, because now, I mean, you can see how with his movies, especially Starship Troopers, there's another big one, like you said, there's a lot of like social commentary, so I can imagine that Total Recall is no different, but it's been, probably been the longest since I've seen that. I mean, that's where I think I had watched RoboCop somewhere within the last like 5 or 6 years,
right?
But I haven't seen Total Recall since, you know, probably like mid-90s or something like that, and Starship Troopers I watched relatively recently, and you know, I picked up on a lot, you know, watching it that second time around in terms of, you know, the message behind it, because when I first saw it, it was just, you know, a movie about guns and aliens, the news, maybe like the TV spots, like as in RoboCop, I always kind of got the sense, oh, this is kind of like funny, but I never really thought too deeply about what it's trying to say.
Right.
You just know that it's, like, weird.
Right. I thought the elements of that were really good in Starship Troopers. From what I remember in Total Recall, I don't think they were that prevalent. I think I remember a few scenes here and there where they used a lot of TV and commercialism and all that sort of thing.
But there's the company, right? This company.
Yeah.
More of, like, a cautionary.
It was kept to a minimum, if I remember, but it wasn't really a driving thing. But even that, it seems to be a reoccurring theme where some corporation is at the helm here. Between Recall and RoboCop.
Right.
Just throwing it out there, I know that Total Recall is an adaptation of a Philip K. Dick short story.
The Terminator is too, in essence.
It's an inspired film, but Total Recall is a direct...
it's the real deal.
Yeah, it's the real deal. Along with Blade Runner, Minority Report, and The Adjustment Bureau, all Philip K. Dick.
So I wanted to just take it back to what I think is obviously like one of the main character themes of RoboCop, the original RoboCop, is this sort of Christ-like character. I mean, he's Peter Weller as Alex Murphy. He's essentially sacrificed himself, or is sacrificed, to become
a savior
in a way. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And he gets, at the end, he nearly gets crucified. I mean, he gets crucified on a cross of bullets, essentially, at the beginning.
Yeah,
he gets his hand blown off. Mm. You know, and once he's reborn as RoboCop, he's kind of, you know, we talked about the baby food. He's literally reborn. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that twice more, he faces a barrage of bullets. Mm-hmm. When he walks into that Coke warehouse, the bust, somehow he figures out where...
Is that what that was?
Spotica was, yeah.
Those?
Right. And the manager is just a guy that walks around in a red button-down shirt.
Drinking wine.
Yeah. Talking openly about making vague deals. But so RoboCop walks in, and he just withstands an onslaught of gunfire.
Right.
And clears the whole building.
And no one hits him in the face.
Yeah.
In the mouth.
Later, when he leaves OCP headquarters, the whole police force is waiting for him.
Yeah.
And he's... faces a barrage of gunfire again.
Yeah.
But this time...
it has an effect.
Yeah. Although he's already fought Ed-209, too, at that point.
Yeah.
So he's a little worn down.
True.
But he's, like, constantly being... like, almost... it's almost like flailing, in a way. It's like he's...
flogging.
Yeah. And he's being betrayed by...
yeah. His own...
police department.
Yeah, right. Which is analogous to... Peter and Thomas, and
basically all of them.
Yeah. Actually, that's Judas, I think there's, yeah, Judas as well. That's right. There's something to be said about that.
It also illustrates how, yeah, the police department is now under control of OCP because they could basically just issue that order. I mean, why?
Right.
Like, why did they even start attacking RoboCop? Because he wasn't in violation. Maybe I'm not remembering it correctly, but I don't recall him like having violated any law.
Well, he was. It was the orders that came down from the upper echelons of OCP.
This is because he had information that indicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know why. I know why. Yeah. I know why. Right. Dick Jones wanted him dead.
But how did Dick Jones have to sway the authority to tell?
It's because they controlled the police department.
But. Why did they have to stop him with a barrage of bullets?
You think they would have some built-in,
or a magnet, or
they actually did. They had a built-in program to prevent him from shooting any of the OCP guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, why not? And you know, why not have a RoboCop that you can control with a remote control or something that's just at hand?
And he could have fought back against the police officers.
Well, like a word command,
which
just shuts him down,
right?
But that wouldn't have fit with the symbolism of the story and
the drama
of him facing a firing squad again.
Almost a necessary plot hole.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I liked that though. I liked the symbolism of him. Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing that can stop him is just this overwhelming onslaught of bullets. Mm-hmm. What is that? And here it is, at the beginning, the bullets are coming from these thugs. Mm-hmm. And when the police are firing on him, we're seeing that essentially the police are also thugs of the corporation. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would get back to you and say, are the police actually portrayed in a positive light?
Yeah.
Because by that point they're just as...
Cronies.
Yeah.
Right.
Which may actually say something to the nature of police force in general, in that, a police force only exists if there's a
attacked private property.
Right. If there's an interest, you know, no one's going to go out and sacrifice their life just for the good of, you know, themselves without some real motivating factor behind all that, I guess.
Well, I think it also just says, you know, that there's, if this, there's always
a control of a control.
There's, you know, authority is whenever you have an institution that holds authority at its center, and in police as in military, I mean, in both instances, civilians are supposed to hold authority in both those institutions. But as we both know, culture of police force and culture of the military tends to be distinct from the culture of civilian life. Mm-hmm. And there's a different relationship to authority in those places, and there's a different relationship and understanding of personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. Is your responsibility to your authority, or is your responsibility to the civilians you protect? Mm-hmm. And I think those two things are hard to keep. Mm-hmm. They're not always compatible.
Right.
And you have to choose which one. And in this instance, you know, it just reminds us that police force is one of those critical institutions that does have the potential to be misused, mm-hmm. or fall under the sway of a misguided authority, mm-hmm. you know, or untrustworthy authority. In this case, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the movie didn't really go into detail as to how Detroit got into the economic shape that it was in, to the point that it needed OCP to run its right. police force.
Which is suggestive that OCP had something to do with it.
Maybe, yeah. And, you know, that probably could be an interesting component of the story. Mm.
Could have been, yeah.
Well, they do expand on that in the sequel,
yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine
probably, yeah.
Because these are the questions that you're left with after watching this movie, and then where do you take RoboCop from here?
Right.
Because at this point, this lays the groundwork. You can't have RoboCop movies where he doesn't take on corporate corruption.
Right, right.
He's not a huge force,
a force bigger than him.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not going to be an interesting RoboCop movie if all he does is just take out pimps the whole movie.
Right, yeah.
You know, it has to be about how he
speak for yourself, right?
How he cleans out the justice system itself.
Right.
You know,
rights the wrongs.
Yeah.
Yeah. The real wrongs.
Right.
Fundamental wrongs.
Because he's the ultimate good cop in the movie.
Right.
He almost succumbs to that desire to exact revenge. Because you'll notice that even though as he's strangling him, that he, although like the Directive 3 pops up on the screen, it's not that same crippling result that you get when Directive 4 is disobeyed, when he even thinks about disobeying Directive 4. So I wonder then if he has the ability to act against those earlier directives.
Right.
Well, I'd like to maybe get to a few like final thoughts on the movie before we go to a more general discussion on some other things. But I'd like to say, just as something I noticed in the movie, there's a nod to sort of father of stop motion effects, Ray Harryhausen. And you can definitely see it in
the
N209 stop motion stuff, which was, I think, was incredible. And like the mat work and compositions of that stuff was great. Although I think I did notice that they reuse the same mat sequence on N209. There's this low angle shot where we're looking from behind N209's leg as he basically walks from behind camera to foreground, and you see whatever they. I think they used that essential image and matted it onto at least two different shots in the movie.
Yeah.
But it still works. But they have that movie. Then there's the sequence towards the end where we're watching an old monster movie where there's this dinosaur creature walking through the city. And it's the exact same animation style.
Stop motion.
Yeah. And I think that's a conscious nod throwback. To that style. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty cool. I like that.
I would say that as far as using that type of special effect is concerned, it was done pretty well, especially since we had some sort of bit rate issue. You know, you could almost not tell. But
you've got less noticeable as a little more.
Yeah, but even from, say, an artistic point of view, you know, stop motion animation is fun. You know, it's a very fun thing to just do and see and participate in. Maybe not so much in a major blockbuster, especially with CGI these days, but as far as that, the usage of it's concerned, I thought RoboCop was very successful in that. A lot of it was definitely used, and I could see a lot of time and money being spent to that alone. Mm-hmm.
I even still think that some stop motion animation surpasses some of the digital work that's done today. I mean, you've seen that definitely. I mean, it's coming. Definitely, CGI has come a long way, but still.
Is there anything you could give an example for? Because maybe while you're thinking, because I think I see what you're saying is that I'm a big fan of, say, film versus recording digitally. We've had this discussion before. Only because film does seem to give the overall picture a quality that, because it's less defined, your imagination is a little bit more employed, I guess, or it's just easier to accept what you're seeing as far as the special effects are concerned, where something that has such sharp contrast, you can see, like, well, that's definitely CGI, and that's definitely real, and that's definitely this, that's definitely that. So I think, you know, maybe where, you know, if you incorporate elements of CGI with stop motion that
stop motion miniature, the reason it looks better is because it actually is real.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's really goes to the heart of where I'm coming from.
There's something about film. I went out and I saw The Princess Bride at the Norwood Theater.
Wow. Recently?
Yeah, on Valentine's Day, actually.
Oh, wow.
And,
by yourself?
No.
Couldn't resist, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's all right. But yeah, definitely. I mean, that could just be me and my nostalgia, but it definitely had a quality.
It's a classic.
Quality. No, I mean, even just the fact that it was on film. You know what I mean? It looked good. You know, despite the movie actually came out, probably around it came out the same year as RoboCop, actually.
Probably.
But there is something about seeing a movie on film. It's a special quality.
So what would your closing thoughts be? You know, what would you have to say?
I guess, some closing thoughts I had was pertain to, you know, I guess I got three questions for everyone here, is that, is this movie a classic, yes or no? And maybe some final thoughts on that. Is it rewatchable? And if so, how frequently? I mean, would you go out and buy this movie to have it as part of your collection? And C, is it remake worthy, which I think we kind of really touched upon already. I guess I'll just offer mine first. I would say that it is a classic. And strictly the first one. I'm not speaking of the sequels here. I don't know that it's rewatchable. If it is, it's something that you got to do once in a long, great while, like such as this.
I'd say it's rewatchable just for the, you know, quotes.
Mm. Yeah, agreed. Mm.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Hump, before you start, is it a classic?
Yes.
In my mind, it is, but I mean, I don't know. Is it a classic in the sense that Gone with the Wind is a classic, or the other big one, Casablanca? That I'm thinking about. I mean, does it add something? I mean, is it essential viewing?
Well, I think it's genre specific.
I mean, in my mind, it's a classic because that's I grew up watching RoboCop, and like Superman, like one of those, you know, larger than life figures. But yeah, I mean, I would say in my own world, yes.
Well, I would relent and say that it's genre specific.
To compare it to
Casablanca,
here's why I'd say it is a classic, regardless of genre. It's in the public mythos at this point. Like people. You know what RoboCop is. RoboCop is just...
It's a household name.
Yeah, it's part of the dialogue. You know? it's just part of the you get everyone just gets the reference,
right?
Because whether right. they've seen it or not,
right?
And that's what makes it a classic.
Sure.
And I think also makes it a classic is that if you take a retrospective look at science fiction genre filmmaking, or just filmmaking in general, if you take a look at a look back at the way robotics in the future and the effects of those things on culture, on cities, you can definitely see a thread here between RoboCop and something like Metropolis, which is classic.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean it's you've got this robotic main figure that mm-hmm. you know. I think RoboCop has some nods mm-hmm. to that, and you know just because mm-hmm. just because a movie nods at its predecessor doesn't automatically make it a classic. Mm-hmm. But I think that it has its place in the discussion at least.
Sure. It would be detrimental to a film to not nod to anything that it may have drawn from, mm-hmm. inspired from.
And suppose the fact that now, how many years has it been? 27 maybe, since it came out, 28 years. Mm-hmm. And you can still sit down and watch it and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely there are parts that take you out that are like hokey, but, mm-hmm. you know. I'd say it holds up pretty well. I think that is part of what makes a movie a classic, too. Mm-hmm. It's a big part of it that it's still, like, relevant.
So that concludes that, I think. That was a pretty good discussion on RoboCop, and I think I'm glad we watched it. Mm. You know, it's been a while since we've seen that.
Yeah. I wasn't disappointed or anything.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't feel at any time that this wasn't going to work.
Mm. But I'd like to ask you guys if there's any other films or TV shows or anything else that you've been occupying yourself with, books, interesting topics that you'd like to talk about or share briefly.
That was pretty boring.
Yeah. We'll cut off guard with this. I didn't expect. I have to think about it.
I can tell you that there will be over the coming weeks now that we're doing this.
Well, that's just not kind of, I'll say that I'm anticipating watching a new season of Portlandia. I don't know if you guys watch that show.
Oh yeah, Portland. That's a
I guess that
premieres modern classic.
Tonight actually is a new season premiering.
What?
And there's a final 8 episodes of Breaking Bad available on Netflix tomorrow. Which I'm one of those people that's waited to watch the end of that show. So
I definitely. That was actually. I don't often get into TV shows, but I got into that. That's had some like really. The Walking Dead. Walking Dead. I really enjoy The Walking Dead. That's a zombie thing. We can get into that later. Yeah. That's a whole different thing. But Breaking Bad was compelling.
Yeah.
It had a lot of good performances by the actors in it. A lot of edge-of-your-seat moments, like genuine, like, edge-of-your-seat moments.
Yeah,
and that, I mean, can't think of the last time I had that in a TV show. So.
I'm a huge fan of The X-Files, watched a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Vince Gilligan directed in many episodes of X-Files, and I could see this common thread. I could see his style evident in those episodes of The X-Files, and I can see why I liked those episodes as much as I did, now that I've been able to see an entire show directed, produced, written by him.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say about Breaking Bad, I think because it is so novel, that's why it has this sort of glue to the TV set and when people want to binge watch episode after episode.
Mm.
I don't know that it has a rewatchability.
Hmm.
And I think, this is why I say this. I started watching it with my girlfriend. And around the middle of season 2, she kind of lost interest. Whatever. People just not in her show. Mm-hmm. Most people just don't like some things. I think she didn't like just the violence, the constant, downer mood. She just said, I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. So I kept watching it until now I got 8 episodes left, and she she watched, you know, the last couple with me. And she said, I feel like I didn't miss anything. Because you, around the, well, if you know the show, you know you've got the main character, Walter White, his wife, her sister, her husband, and Walter and his wife's two kids. They have this, you know, this little family unit. It departs from that in the third, fourth season a little bit. You know, you don't see those people anymore, and that was really like the core of the show at the beginning. You basically Walter White secretly making and distributing meth. His brother-in-law is the head of the Drug Enforcement. Well, he's a senior officer in the Drug Enforcement Agency who specializes in stopping and distributing the creation of meth. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't know that. And that's a huge interesting tension when you see them sitting up beside the pool at a barbecue, and one of them is a criminal and one of them is a law enforcement agent, and they don't know, or, you know, the DEA guy doesn't know this. By the time you get to the end of season five, towards the end, you're back. And Walter's had his marriage problems, then all these other character developments, but ultimately it's come right back to basically what we've been watching, wanting to see the whole show is have his brother-in-law catch him. Yeah. We want that to happen. If you've already seen the whole show, I don't know, and you already know what the payoff is, I don't know that you can, the average person can sit down and watch the whole series again. Because the whole reason, I think the whole reason that you wanted to get through show after show is because you want to see them get that closer to that. See Walter and, I can't remember the character's name now, but his brother-in-law, you know, come closer to their confrontation. But once you've already seen that, I don't know if there's as much of a inclination to watch the whole show.
Yeah.
Still an excellent show. But anyway, I think we've reached the end of the episode here. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys for all the input.
You're welcome.
And hopefully this is the beginning of many to come.
Mm-hmm.
And signing off.
Signing off.